This is CliffCentral.com.
If I got it, I'ma give it to you. If I got it, I'ma give it to you. If I got it, I'ma give it to you. You know.
Yeah.
Oh. Can I get my thrills?
Yeah, get your thrills.
Mm.
Yes, right, get your Thursday thrill on, Mabali Moloi.
Oh my God.
Get your thrills.
It's cliffcentral.com. It's what's going on there?
Oh, sure. Goodness.
I know what that was. It sounded rude.
Sure.
How rude.
How very rude.
Yeah. So, good morning. If you've just started your day now, cliffcentral.com here to keep you company between now and 9 o'clock. We have lots of exciting stuff coming up. Among other things, we'll check in on the news. We're going to talk about National Orgasm Day, which John T is celebrating tomorrow on Sex Talk. Yes, indeed. There is no burning platform today, though. Justice is not available. He's busy traveling. And he will be back next Thursday. Right, Sia?
Yes.
Okay.
Ben, try not to.
I'm saying nothing. Yeah. I'm saying nothing.
Ben is convinced that Justice is actually a bounty hunter.
Yeah.
And that he gets these assignments and he has to go and find someone and kill them.
You really want to get inside Justice's boot, his car boot, to see what's...
Well, not really, because then I'd have to answer questions from other people. No, look, everyone's got to do their thing in life. And if Justice is doing that, then... Look, I like Justice.
Your list of theories is growing so long, I'm going to keep like a tabs of it. Oh, yes. Yeah. What do you call it? Truths?
I'm just an observant person. Why hold that against me?
Okay. That's it.
Anyway, whether Justice is out murdering someone or collecting them for bounty, we don't know.
Well, it's not really murder when you're given a chance to make money.
Sometimes they say, I want this person alive or dead.
Yeah.
You know?
He could just be transporting them.
Okay.
Maybe Justice is the transporter.
Well, who knows?
Whoa.
Anyway, Justice is not here today, so no burning platform brought to you by Nando's, but we will resume that early next week. All right, over to you, Mubs. What's going on?
So there is still this lingering controversy over the latest Nelson Mandela book, which was written by his doctor, Vijay Ramlakhan. Now Winnie Madikizela Mandela has been dragged into the story. And she says that she is disturbed by reports that she gave permission for the publication of the controversial book. Now, the book was written, as I said, by the late Nelson Mandela's doctor, Vijay Ramlakhan, who assured publishers he had permission from Madiba's family to go ahead. Earlier this week, you'll remember that Penguin Random House withdrew the book out of respect for the Mandela family, also because, you know, they really don't want to be involved in a scandal. Madikizela Mandela has released a statement, which she did last night, saying that she played no role in it at all. She admits to signing an autograph for the author, but says it was only out of courtesy for someone who had cared for Madiba. In the statement, the struggle stalwart says only Ramlakhan can tell the South African public and the world who commissioned him or approved the book.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Controversy.
It's that classic case of he said, she said.
Look, all we want to know is, I don't care who gave permission or didn't. Is the book true?
Sure. We don't know because, you know...
Because if what is in the book is true, then I don't care who gave permission. In fact, I'm not interested in the Mandela family giving permission. You don't have the rights to tell us or not to tell us.
But what would one would assume that if there were things that were not true, that would also would have been raised by now.
Then why don't they just take legal action against him about that part of the book which they think is untrue or defamatory?
Well, Grasso Machel's lawyers yesterday, you know, when the story was first breaking, you know, at the time they had said, well, they need to just have a look at whether any doctor-patient confidentiality stuff was broken. Mm-hmm. Now, I haven't heard the latest updates on that regard.
I don't think you can have doctor-patient confidentiality with a dead person.
Well, this is what we were talking about yesterday, but, you know, we don't know.
Mm.
Somebody who's more in tune with the law needs to break it down for us.
Yeah. Because the biggest thing with the family is the honor and the dignity of Madiba and the fact that that's now could possibly be tainted with these details, like, you know, being revealed. But, oh well.
I want to know what happened. don't you? I mean, this is the greatest man who's ever lived in South Africa. When he died, it was a moment of huge national emotional outrage and mental out, you know, not mental, psychological outpouring of emotion. I suppose a lot of South Africans were very upset personally, even though they didn't necessarily know the man. Mm. So we all felt like we were involved there. That doesn't give us the right to find out everything.
Yeah.
But what's the point of the guy publishing a book? I mean, if he felt there were stories that needed telling, then the only criteria we should use as to whether or not they should be told is, are they true or not? And if they're not true, let the Mandela family sue him.
Well, I mean, how will we ever know whether something is true or not? I mean, some of these moments would have involved just him, the doctor, and Madiba, nobody else. So there's no way of us knowing whether or not some of the things that he says are true or not.
Some other part of me says that I don't want my doctor one day, who's, you know, checking me out physiologically every day, I don't want that person telling everybody that I had, you know, 3 rotten teeth and, you know, I kept shitting myself in the bed. I don't
want that.
That's
the honor and dignity of it. Yeah. But, you know, I've personally reached out to Penguin Random House. They aren't doing any more comments or press around the book. Nonetheless, the book was delivered to us. And so that is my weekend reading. And I'll give a different take on Monday after finishing
you
it.
Tell us if there's anything saucy in there.
Let's see.
Thank you.
Okay.
See ya.
Okay. I don't know a heck of a lot about National Orgasm Day, which is why John T. Soul will be telling us more about it a little bit later. But what I can tell you about, seeing as how it is July the 27th, over in Finland, it's National Sleepyhead Day.
What does that mean?
Excuse me?
Is that an actual thing? Sleepyhead?
National Sleepyhead Day in Finland, this holiday, is related to... is related to the legend of the 7 sleepers of Ephesus. But it is an informal celebration rather than a religious festival. Now, these 7 sleepers, they were young Christians who were persecuted for their faith during the reign of Emperor Decius.
Decius.
There you go. I knew you would know. So there were 7 of them, and they were Christians. And it was a no-no back in those days. So they hid in a cave near Ephesus. They fell asleep and woke up approximately 180 years later. Nice sleep that.
It's a hell of a sleep.
When Christians were no longer being persecuted. The Catholic Church commemorates them on July the 27th. And on National Sleepyhead Day in Finland, the laziest person in the house, or the person who is the last to wake up, is woken up by either having, you know, water thrown on them, or they pick them up and throw them in a lake or a river or the sea.
How bizarre.
The largest celebration is held in the city of Nantali, where a celebrity is thrown into the sea at 7 a.m.
I can think of a few celebrities we could throw into the sea. Huh?
Name one.
Come on, there are a lot. That's nice. So even though this whole thing happened in Ephesus in Turkey, the Finnish are the ones who celebrate it.
The Finnish are the ones who put a nice spin on it. And, you know, it seems like on National Sleepyhead Day, they just look for an excuse to wake somebody up horribly.
Horribly?
Yeah. Right. I mean, can you imagine being woken up with water being thrown in your face?
Yes, not very good.
Not very fun.
No, that's not fun at all. In fact, if you want me in a temper, that's exactly what you need to do.
Yeah.
All right, well, let us turn our attention, since you already raised the issue, to National Orgasm Day, which happens this week. And let's go to John T.
Oh, God.
Yes. That's right, John T. Searle from Sex Talk, who's on the line to tell us all about what he's going to do for National Orgasm Day tomorrow. Morning, John T.
Morning, Gareth.
How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. How are you guys?
Are you ready to build up to National Orgasm Day tomorrow?
Absolutely.
All right, so what do you got planned for us, John T? What's going to be going on in studio? What precautions do we need to take?
Raincoats, wetsuits, rain hats. So we're doing a live squirting orgasm. First time it's ever been done on the radio in South Africa, maybe in the world. So it's about...
Yeah? Sorry, there was just some woman getting excited.
Yeah, they do that there. It's about female ejaculation, which is a really beautiful experience of pleasure that almost all women can have once they learn how to. And it's, yeah, this incredible experience of feminine power and feminine pleasure. And we thought there was no better way to celebrate Orgasm Day.
All right. So tell us, first of all, let's debunk all the myths, because I've heard people saying, well, no, the squirting thing, it's not real, that it's pee, that it's a myth, that it's something that only happened once porn became a thing. So tell me, for once and for all, is it possible? How does it happen? What is it? Where does it occur?
Okay, so it's not a myth at all, and it's nothing new, because in the tantric literature, which is over 5,000 years old, it's written about and taught about. So the fluid that's ejaculated is called amrita, which means nectar of the goddess, and it's produced by the G-spot. So it comes out of the same hole that urine comes out of, and that's why some people think that it might be. But chemically, it's totally different. In texture and smell and taste, it's different as well.
All right.
So almost every woman can do this. Uh-huh. But the blockages to it are things like negative beliefs about sex, about pleasure, about your body, abusive sexual experiences, emotional withholding, pressure to perform. Because for a lot of men, it's become like a bucket list thing. We have to do this. We have to have a threesome, and you have to squirt.
Right.
And as soon as there's that kind of pressure, it doesn't happen.
All right, so...
And when it happens, it can be literally up to almost a glass full of liquid that comes out.
Wow, that's quite something. Sia's dumbfounded. He can't believe this.
Girl!
Doesn't that
so we have lots of plastic sheeting that we're putting all over the studio.
Huh. Apparently you've got a live studio audience.
I believe so. Yeah. And it's really exciting.
So Jonty, do these women, when they're having these squirting orgasms, do they get dehydrated? Do they need extra liquid nourishment?
Yeah, afterwards, women can drink up to 2-3 liters of water.
Wow.
Because it's an incredible amount of fluid.
Okay.
And it can happen, once it started, it can happen again and again and again.
Wow. So Ben wants to know something, Jonty.
Jonty, when was the first time you made a woman squirt?
Wow, Ben, I'm not sure that I remember that. Oh. I have to be honest.
But was it something that you literally did try and do, or was it just like it happened and you
No, it just happened, and I was like, wow, so this is what it really is. Huh. So the thing about trying to make it happen is that's one of the obstacles to this, because then that creates pressure, that she feels like she needs to perform. And as soon as that happens, you kind of move further and further away from it. So it needs to be quite a natural expression, and then it happens easily. But as soon as there's pressure there in any way,
Performance
becomes much harder.
But do you think that once the woman goes through this process, normal sex, it's just like, ugh, so passé afterwards? I mean, like once you kind of squirted,
because...
It's like kind of raising the bar, isn't it?
No, because they're different experiences. So the squirting wouldn't always happen from, let's say, penetration, because sometimes it needs very specific and quite intense and quite continued G-spot stimulation.
So
during penetration, that wouldn't always happen for a lot of women.
Are you saying then that is something that requires hand manipulation?
Very often, yes. Huh. Simply because the G-spot is a gland inside the vagina. And so in Tantra, we call a pussy a yoni, Y-O-N-I. That means sacred space. And the G-spot often requires quite intense stimulation, which is very specific, because sometimes it's quite a small area that you're stimulating. And during penetration, that wouldn't always happen.
So, Jonty, what do these women that you make squirt tell you in terms of what it feels like for them?
It's different for everybody, but it's often an enormous release and often quite an emotional experience as well. It's deeply, deeply pleasurable. They often feel quite drained afterwards, quite tired because of the release, and also quite elated. that can be quite a high.
Sounds amazing.
Oh. But also some deep emotional release, because when we do let go like that, it's a very vulnerable space for a woman to go in, and that can be very emotional.
Jonty, is there any equivalent at all for a man? I mean, apart from what we already know, men have orgasms, blah, blah, blah. But is there anything new that we've discovered about the male orgasm?
Just that there are different ways to have orgasms for men, and it's not always about ejaculation. So sometimes for men, the power is learning to have orgasms without ejaculation, which kind of turns everything around, which means that men can actually be multi-orgasmic, because it's the ejaculation that ends a sexual experience, not the orgasm.
Huh. How do you do that?
Men can learn to have two or three orgasms quite close together and not have the ejaculation.
How do you do that?
It's a process of training, especially your pelvic floor muscles, which need to be really strong. You need to learn to breathe really, really well. And the secret is actually in being able to relax your pelvic floor muscles very, very deeply. So the power is in the relaxation and the breathing, not in contraction. So for men, orgasm is a contractive experience.
Hmm.
Think about when you're getting close to orgasm, your muscles get tight, your breathing gets quick, and then you have this big explosion and you scream or shout, or if you're the quiet type, you just go, "Ooh, that was nice." And that's all that it is.
Sorry, I was just reminded of a tweet that I saw where a girl said, "Men who are dead silent when they ejaculate are the real serial killers of the world."
Now, John T, my buddy brought a good point up earlier. Now, this lady who you bring in to be part of the show, is she very comfortable in public with these kind of things? Is someone you've known for quite some time? Because it's people are obviously going to ask who is going to volunteer for such a thing.
Sure. Yes. We've worked with her at Sexpo before in the Theatre of the Erotic that we did there. She's very comfortable in public. She has quite a strong exhibitionist streak. So for an experience like this, to be really honest, that's what you want for this. It's almost, she can do this pretty much at will. She's been doing it for quite a long time. She's very in touch with her sexuality. And she is going to have a microphone on her, so you'll be able to hear all of her noises of arousal, which is really exciting.
Awesome. And do we need
so
to do
we're
any...
really looking forward to this.
All right, besides the plastic sheeting and the studio, what else do you require? Do you need a special chair, a table? What position is she going to be in optimally?
She's going to be lying on her back on a massage table.
Okay.
And that's all that you need. So we're going to be using some coconut oil as a lubricant.
Wow.
And before we start, we'll talk a little bit about the squirting, about what it is, about how you make it happen. So we're actually going to do a mini lesson on it tomorrow. So on one hand, it's reasonably simple. On the other hand, because of the emotional connection, it can be really complex. But we'll do a lesson first on how women can have this experience. And you can have it, you can do this on your own. You don't need a partner for it. And sometimes it's even easier on your own.
Wow.
Because there's no pressure.
Yeah, you see, I was just going to...
You're not doing it for somebody.
I was just going to ask, because I imagine, you know, after listening to your show, you know, there are some people who are going to say, "Hey, honey, let's try this tonight." Or, you know, some woman who thinks, "Let me give it a go." Realistically speaking, how long would it take before one actually perfects this skill?
That's a good question. And it's kind of how long is a piece of string, because it's different for everybody. Some people will try it a few times and it will happen really quickly. And for others, it's going to take much longer. And often that's because of the emotional stuff that's involved.
Well, I'm looking forward to tomorrow, 10 o'clock, Sex Talk Live.
We'll be there.
All right. Thank you, Jonty. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks, Gareth. Awesome. Have a wonderful day.
Cool. There we go. Orgasm day tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, in my head, the vision that I have for the show tomorrow is for it to be like a sexier National Geographic documentary.
Yes.
Or like a David Attenborough something. Yes. because Jonty will just be narrating in the corner.
As the woman lies on her back.
Yes.
And gently is taken to pleasure by the creepy man, Jonty Searle. You can see her pelvic floor rising and falling.
Yes.
In time.
Moan, moan, heavy breathing, yeah. Moan, moan, scream.
Exactly. That's the whole thing. All right, let's get back to some news.
All right. Well, we're here. We're at this juncture, so let's keep it going. Let's talk about sperm count now, shall we? Because allegedly, sperm count among men in North America, Europe, Australia, and New Zealand has halved in the last 40 years.
Oh, that's terrible.
This
terrible
is according
news.
To new Plastic. Research warning of fertility risk, though outside experts have urged caution about these results that have just been released. You know how it is in the scientific community. One researcher releases something, another researcher is like, I call bullshit. Yeah, that's just how it goes.
That's how science works.
So a review of data which was collected from nearly 43,000 men in 185 previous studies from 1973 to 2011 found a significant decline in sperm concentration. And this is according to findings published in the journal Human Reproduction Update. So the research team have found that there has been no significant decline in among men in South America, Asia, and Africa, where fewer studies have been conducted. Apart from fertility risks, reduced sperm count could be an indicator of underlying health problems caused by environmental factors. You know, there's the whole pesticide poisoning debate, stress, smoking, your diet, other lifestyle factors.
Wake up, white people.
Now, the topic is a controversial one, as numerous studies in the past have contradicted one another, some showing a sperm count decline, others not. So the jury is still out on this one. But this latest research saying sperm count in, you know, among men in certain parts of the world has halved.
It's white people.
Okay. How exactly?
Yeah.
Well, listen to where it was. North America and Europe.
North America, Europe, Australia, see? New Zealand.
It's white people.
But we are becoming just less impressive as male specimens. A couple of weeks ago, I wrote an article about testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as we start losing testosterone as guys, that's it. We might as well just be shipped off to the knackers.
Correct.
Sold for spare parts.
And when do you people start losing your testosterone? At around what age group?
From like late 20s, it really sort of starts kicking in.
Really?
Oh, wow.
That early?
But it's got a lot to do with with like where we are in life and what we do. Obviously, stress kills everything, right?
Mm.
Stress just kills your sex drive, your sperm counts, your testosterone levels, your ability to be a nice person. It is the worst thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Not sleeping enough.
Mm.
If you're not sleeping enough, your testosterone is going to drop.
Wake up. White people.
If you're not exercising, it's going to drop. So you've got to be doing weights. You can't just go for a walk or anything like that. You've got to physically be, you know, testing resistance training.
Yeah.
You've got to stop smoking, obviously. That's just a no-brainer. You got to get more of the D, vitamin D. That's the most important thing.
Right.
So being out in the sun also helps. So you got to be active and that kind of stuff. And plastic is a massive problem. All of us. If we're going to avoid plastic on a day-to-day basis, whether it's drinking water, whether it's eating stuff out of, it's a huge thing.
You brought this up yesterday, but I'm starting to think you might be onto something.
Wait, how does plastic factor in?
Well, look, obviously you get your good plastics and your cheap plastics, but estrogen is a horrible thing for men, okay? That's when you get the bitch tits, that's when you lose your hair, that's when your libido just falls through the floor.
Right.
And plastic is just a horrible compound, it's a horrible thing, but estrogen... So if you're warming up microwave meals, if you're using bottled water a lot, like, you know, shame on you.
Right.
All horrible things here. So you must keep your testosterone up. You can get tested for it, and you can get some supplements, which also help.
Wow.
But as soon as you lose testosterone as a man, that's it.
Oh, man, just another thing to worry about now.
Now,
it'll make you moody, it'll make you just useless, it'll make you despondent. And it could make you depressed as well.
Taking this opportunity to laugh at us, Mama? Because I feel like you're enjoying
I'm laughing this. Inside. I'm laughing inside.
Okay.
What are the impacts of all that junk that weightlifters and bodybuilders pump into their systems? What does that stuff do to their testosterone?
Well, see, that's more about organ damage around your kidneys and your liver, probably. Mm. So all that protein, that's not so much going to kill your testosterone. It's just going to kill you.
Yeah. It's just bad. It's
see,
bad
with them, like, they're doing a lot of weight training, so testosterone is going to obviously be helped. They are eating pretty functionally.
And all the chemicals that these schoolboy rugby people are dumping in their bodies?
Also not good, because you might get an imbalance in testosterone. Testosterone is a tough word. But yeah, like, so when you go for these supplements, right, it's about having a level. So if you're 50 and you look like Peter from Family Guy, you can't go to a doctor and say, I want testosterone levels of a 20-year-old. It's got to be in keeping with where you are.
Yeah.
And an imbalance is just a terrible thing.
But I wonder if you were to inject yourself with, like, you know,
there are guys who do.
Of course you do. And then you become muscular, very
erratic.
Wouldn't
your body just be like flipped over and not know what's going on?
Very aggressive. Be screwed, yeah.
Irrational.
Oh.
And you start becoming a problem.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've always believed that at the end of the day, you know, our bodies are not stupid. So for all the things that we try to do to manipulate our bodies, at the end of the day, it's still about chemical equations inside your body. And your body's not stupid.
Correct.
But isn't
when
you
put
you...
something foreign in it that's not supposed to be there, your body will react a certain way. So
or become superhuman. No, I'm joking.
All right.
Well, sticking to some health news, this is also revolutionary. For the first time ever, American scientists have successfully edited the DNA of a human embryo.
Yeah.
So this is in the attempt to correct genes that cause inherited diseases. Mm-hmm. So researchers from Oregon Health and Science University in Portland have managed to modify numerous one-cell embryos using a new technique. So sources say that this team was able to safely inject gene-editing chemicals into human eggs near the moment of fertilization.
Phenomenal.
This is massive. So they, right now, this is a milestone for them. They are officially one step closer to engineering the first genetically modified human beings on Earth, but they aren't ready just to go into clinical trials yet. It is a proof of principle. It is proof of principle, rather, that it actually can work.
I have no problem with this. And there are a lot of people who ethically think it shouldn't be done. But I think if you can make sure that your child is rid of inherited diseases from birth, what a pleasure.
Mm. We're going to get to a point where this is norm.
Don't you think this is the norm, though? Yeah, of course.
Because I used to want be one of those people like, no, you can't do that. But now I'm like, actually, I like the idea of shopping for a baby.
Of course you do. and you can decide what color eyes your baby has, what kind of hair it has, whether it's athletic or not.
Exactly. You put so much time and effort into buying the right car, the right house, the right furniture. You don't want an ugly child.
Do you think we'll literally get to the point where we can say, no, I want, you know, there are a lot of tall people in my family. I want the tall gene.
Yeah.
I don't like the fat gene. Will we get to that point?
Yes.
I think we're there.
The tall gene.
To some degree, we're already
there. Asia's going to be a different place, huh?
Yeah.
And then, Gareth, you're like the scientist person here. And nobody, maybe you as well. You see, that just shows my lack of.
I'm the most scientist person here.
Can you take a gene trait from elsewhere?
Yeah.
And you replicate that?
Yeah.
So isn't there a market of selling a specific gene? Like the Kim Kardashian big butt gene?
Well, your DNA is your... Technically, that's your intellectual property.
Oh.
So if someone wants to use one of your genes, you could charge them for it.
Oh. Okay, guys.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. I'm in a new business now. If anyone wants any part of my...
I mean, that's essentially what sperm banks are about, loosely.
Hmm.
It's you handing over your genetic intellectual property, and then, you know, some woman or couple walking in there and saying, ooh, I like the fact that he has an IQ of X, or the fact that he has blue eyes, or the fact that he...
But in a sperm bank, you're still letting nature do most of the putting together. You see, in gene editing, you're actually choosing very specific things and leaving them out or keeping them in.
Yeah, I mean, the cancer gene, that thing can get fucked.
Yeah, right.
Well, that's their main priority right now. Then at one point we can get
it out,
you know, superficial. Right. But this is amazing.
Okay, what else have we got going on?
Okay, so there is a New York restaurant that has implemented a new law that's got a couple of people riled up and then others really not caring so much. They have banned parents, and that would be both parents, from having more than one alcoholic drink if they're with their children at their establishment.
Huh.
And the rule has now split opinion on social media, because social media is where it's all at.
So what do you think of that?
Oh, look, I mean, we're always saying here, don't tell other people how to do things, how to live their lives. Don't interfere with them making their decisions.
Right.
But, you know, then at the same time, drinking and driving is a huge issue.
In New York, though, it's unlikely they'll be driving. There's public transport, there's taxis, there's Uber, there's...
So then why are the parents being banned?
Because this restaurant, or whoever decided to come up with this rule, thinks that they should be regulating other people's behavior.
Yeah, it seems more like a moral decision on their part, like, than an actual...
You've got children, so you shouldn't drink around them.
Well, look, this restaurant, Peddler's Bar and Grill, to be exact.
Oh, for God's sake, it's a bar and grill.
In Clifton Park, they refused to serve a second drink to one responsible adult dining with children. Their policy states, the commitment to end fatalities from drinking and driving requires all of us to participate.
Sure.
Each of us take part in this mission in our own unique way.
No, it doesn't.
We at Peddlers will limit one of the responsibilities adults to one alcoholic beverage while dining with children.
No, it doesn't involve all of us. I'm not involved. I don't care what you do with your children. I don't care if you smash into a pole with them. It's none of my business. It's got nothing to do with me. I didn't make your children. I'm not your parent. If you want to drink, you drink. If you want to smoke, you smoke. If you want to drive badly, you drive badly. Doesn't involve me, because I don't have to care about that. And if I'm the unlucky bastard who's at the other end of, or the receiving end of, you in your car when you're driving drunk, well, too bad. Luck of the draw for me.
Hmm. Well, as it turns out, the policy has actually been in place for a couple of years, but it has recently been a subject of discussion on social media because, you know, somebody took a screen grab of the policy, which is, you know, pasted on one of the walls in the restaurant. And then, you know, they said, well, what do you guys think of this? What are your thoughts? So people have started discussing it. But the restaurant manager, Melissa Gravel, says that for them, it's about giving children a voice and reducing the chance of drink driving related accidents. Well, I could never live with myself knowing that I killed someone driving, she said. I could never do that. So that is a choice that you can avoid.
I've said this before. What about people who fall asleep at the wheel? How are you going to stop them? Are you going to test everyone who comes to your bar and grill? Say, oh, I'm sorry, ma'am, you're too tired to drive. And why are you doing this for people with kids? Why don't you care about adults who are actually contributing to the economy? Why are you so worried about children, especially not yours? How about the adults who are making your restaurant work, who are giving you money for the food that you give them? Why don't you care about them? So you're going to make this rule so that kids don't get killed. What about adults? Why do you think kids are so special? Either be a humanitarian that you sound like you want to be perceived as and look after everybody equally, or stop telling people what to do. You can only choose those two. For you to involve yourself in other people's children's lives is outrageous. How dare you try to make yourself important to other people's children? They didn't ask you. The parents didn't ask you. No one in society is going around to the bar and grill. Hi, ma'am. We need you to be the superwoman of this block. Please stop other people from drinking. I hate that when people say, I'm doing it for the children. Why? Children are parasitic on the societal system.
That's what Michael Jackson said. Doing for the children.
I'm going to do it for the children. There Meanwhile, we know what he was doing to the children.
Ooh.
Allegedly.
That's my favorite word these days, because you always got to be safe everywhere.
These people who say, oh no, these people who say, I'm going to do it for the children. Why not do it for the adults?
They don't care about the adults, Gareth.
The adults are the ones who are keeping you in business. The kids aren't going with their wallets full of cash, spending them at your bar and grill. Am I right?
Yeah. Can't knock it.
Bar and grill, look after the people who are paying your wages. Bar and grill, every couple that walk in there without children, you should be giving double the money to. Half price.
I wonder how this has gone down. So you said it's been around for a couple of years or a couple of months already?
No, a couple of years.
A couple of years. So evidently, you know, if you don't agree with it,
she's still in business.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's go through some of the tweets that were posted here. I think that's absolutely ridiculous. You can't deal with the kids at dinner on one drink. And then another person, I don't see a problem. Don't like their rules? Don't go to their restaurant. It's fair as simple enough. As that. Mm. And then somebody else, well, I have had this policy for myself since becoming a parent. Great idea. So the reviews are mixed.
Okay.
But I mean, yes, it's a case of, you know, Melissa, it's her establishment.
Mm.
She can have whatever policies she wishes as sure. the owner of that business.
It's her Zimbabwe.
And if you don't like it, then you don't have to spend money at her bar.
It's her. Did you just say it's her Zimbabwe?
Yeah, it's her Zimbabwe.
Hey guys, think of the real losers here. It's the waiters who now got to convey this message to people.
Oh.
So it's going to affect their tip.
Yeah.
The bill's going to be smaller, so there'll be less tip even if there is one.
Yeah, this
and they're
is
thinking,
true.
All I want to do is make some money.
But you know, like, my parents don't drink, but I have aunts and uncles who drink, and particularly even a great aunt who drinks.
Yeah, you've
and
told us about her.
Every uncle drinks.
I actually prefer them kind of tipsy. You know, I don't know how I deal with them. So imagine if you had one of those hard-assed parents who was just a pain. Sometimes
See,
you do want them.
My parents don't drink either at all. And I know they're not going to start anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
And so this wouldn't affect me. But I don't like, I just for some reason, it really strikes me as very odd that people want to regulate other people's behavior. It's just that it's an unnecessary condition. And it's not necessarily life-threatening. So don't take it to the nth degree.
Mm-hmm.
Don't try to make it seem like you are saving the rest of humanity from a drunken driver. You're not. For all you know, all those parents are going home on public transport. For all you know, they are great parents, whether they have one drink or three or none. You can't make general rules like this.
Yeah, but Gareth, you just the other day were saying that, you know, you've gotten to the point in your life where you Uber when you know that you're going to go out and have dinner
and
or go to a party. Yeah, but I mean, that's a decision that you've made. Now, ideally, we should all be aspiring to make that kind of decision.
Yeah, and obviously...
But some people genuinely don't care. They will get into their car, they'll be drunk out of their minds, and then they will kill someone.
It could be me, even though I'm in the Uber.
Mm.
You know, so you've got to accept certain things. You're not... Number one, you're not going to get everyone in line. It's never going to happen. There are always going to be people who break the rules. But to go after them... You're a restaurant. Focus on being a restaurant. Let the police do that stuff. Right?
Hmm.
Stay in your lane. God damn it. All right, what else? Jeez, can't get more worked up about something that doesn't affect you like that.
Okay, do you want to go into a bit of a wishful thinking if only we were in his shoes type of moment?
Ooh, is it someone really rich and famous?
Yes, with really rich and famous dramas as well. Ooh. You know, drama and problems.
Don't let it be Dan Bilzerian.
Okay, let's
go.
Oh,
well, actually, that's another story I can bring up a little later about Dan Bilzerian.
Let's dream.
But Quincy Jones.
Oh okay.
Quincy Jones literally does not have to work anymore another day in his life. He has so much money, but he is still fighting for more. So he has been going on for the past 4 years, taking the Michael Jackson estate to court about royalties and licensing fees ever since Michael Jackson's death back in 2009. And so he sued the estate for $30 million, just ever so casually, saying, you guys, whatever y'all have been doing, dealing with Michael's debts or trying to pay that off, I've been cheated off on the money. And he has successfully won in court. And even though the court has said that actually what you've been saying is not exactly worth $30 million, he's been awarded $9.4 million. Now, this goes into everything, including the three albums that Quincy worked on for Michael Jackson, which are Off the Wall, Thriller, and Bad, which were, by the way, MJ's biggest albums.
Oh, right.
Thriller, man.
Oh, just imagine, you know? And also, this goes into the likes of any sort of Michael Jackson song from those albums being remixed. It goes into the licensing fees for the documentary This Is It that was released after Michael Jackson's death, and also any sort of production or performances that are made, including and containing Michael Jackson songs. So there you go. Just good. Like my... He does not ever have to work another day in his life, but he's still fighting. Well, and he got $9.4 million.
We should all thank Quincy Jones because he took over where Joseph Jackson left off. Keeping Michael in line.
Oh, and then if you've ever been worried about what has been happening to Michael Jackson and the likes of his beloved chimpanzee Bubbles, well, Bubbles is now an artist.
So Bubbles outlived Michael.
Yes.
And Bubbles an artist.
Bubbles is now making art. And so, yeah, listen, things were rough ever since Michael Jackson died. So you gotta, you know, make your own way.
Bubbles, I'm so proud of you.
Oh, hey, Michael.
Hey, how are you?
We're good. How are you?
I heard the story about Quincy Jones.
Yeah.
You know, Quincy made me sing Man in the Mirror 100 times.
100?
Oh, man.
Before he got the sound he wanted.
Oh, and it was...
He broke me.
He broke you, Michael?
He made me cry.
Oh, no.
I don't like to cry. He made me cry because that's the sound he wanted. So when you listen to Man in the Mirror, you can hear I am very emotional. Listen to this.
Listen, seriously.
I'm gonna make a change for once in my life. It's gonna feel real good. Gonna make a difference. Gonna make it right. And as I turn up the collar,
so apparently the story goes, Quincy made him do it again and again and again and again and again and again, and he got a perfectly good first take, and up to the 20th take was perfectly good. Could have used them, but he wanted Michael to break.
Jeez.
He wanted to feel emotion when Michael was singing, so he made him do it so many times that eventually you could hear, like, his voice was cracking.
Oh, that's a, yeah.
That's not a good thing to do to
it's
your
a
artist.
Fantastic thing to do to an artist.
No, I mean, aren't you messing with his tool, his voice?
I did it too. It was very painful and very unkind.
Yeah, Michael.
I hated that. Afterwards, I put dog shit. Quincy Jones sandwiches.
Oh, sure. Okay. That's, I did not expect you to do something like that.
I told him it was peanut butter, but he's so old, he didn't know the difference.
But Michael, if you had to choose between Joe and Quincy, though.
I'll take Quincy anytime.
Exactly. Even though Quincy's more obvious about taking your money and how much money he wants.
Yes.
So if you are really interested in this Bubbles situation,
yes,
you know, Bubbles has retired and now spends his days, you know, living in an ape sanctuary. And so now his artwork will go on exhibit in a Miami gallery next month. And, you know, like the likes of as well... the likes of a former ape who starred alongside Mark Wahlberg in Planet of the Apes will also be exhibiting as well, and they're trying to raise £1.5 million actually.
For the apes.
Oh yeah. So do it for the apes, do it for the kids.
All right. How lovely.
To love.
Here we go, listen to this.
Oh, well, oh, deepest God, somebody's broken heart, and a washout of fear. They follow the pattern of the wind, you see. Cause they got no place to be. That's why I'm starting with me. I'm starting with the man.
So if Quincy gave us this great song, he can have his money.
Don't change his way, and no
If you wanna make the world a better place, take a look at yourself, then make a change. I'll start dealing with the man in the mirror.
And you can really hear at the end of the song how he's cracking up. So there we go. If Quincy got the genius of Michael Jackson to come to full fruition, let him have his money. I have no problem with that at all. Good Jeez. For him.
You think about it. Every single commercial that might play, you know, Thriller was released 35 years ago.
Right.
Any movie that has a Michael Jackson reference or song in it, any production, even if it's a cover.
Absolutely.
That cash register is like...
Give him the money. His cash register got ting, 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 ling, 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 ling. All right. Here is a guy called Psychology Masiwiza from Zimbabwe.
Mm. Okay.
Psychology Masiwiza is going to tell us about ZANU-PF's promises. Okay, what they did and didn't promise.
Okay, can I run through this very quickly? 2.2 million jobs. Yes, we promised that. But you see what people tend to forget? And I want to say this on record, and I hope it's the last time we are saying this, as ZANU-PF. We did not say we were going to create 2.2 million formal jobs.
They're laughing at him. Even the guy next to him is laughing at him.
Jobs. And when you define what a job is, it includes casual jobs. So, for example, you can use the word job in the sentence as follows. I gave him a job to wash my clothes. Listen, and that sentence is grammatically correct. So what? Listen,
please.
We
have another round of questions.
We have created millions of jobs in the.
We have one more round of questions
in the informal sector.
If we keep on in the agenda, we will not have that session. Please.
Can I finish off? We have created, in fact, we have exceeded the 2.2 million.
4.4 million.
We are now at the last count, including the informal jobs, at over 3 million jobs.
What a lunatic.
Wow, guys.
So he says when government create jobs, it means Mabali washes my clothes once. That's her job.
Wow.
That's creating a job.
But, you know...
Of course, government created that.
How did he have the temerity to carry on speaking after they initially laughed?
They laughed
the way that
lot.
They burst out and laughed at him. I felt embarrassed for him. Shame. I would just walk off the stage. I wouldn't be able to carry on after being laughed at like that.
Well, that's ZANU-PF. Their own spin doctors can't hold it together. Guess what song is back?
You need to give us more than that, Gareth.
All right, well, here's a little clue.
This thing right here. Juicy. Sister, check it out.
Oh, a remake.
It's a remake of Thong to Thong Thong Thong. Oh.
The song is back. I like the new beat, actually.
Let me see that song.
Hey.
Uh-huh.
thong thong.
Oh.
How do you like that, huh?
Okay.
So a new thong song featuring Sisqo. It's JCY.
Okay.
You can find that on the internet and download it illegally.
Okay.
I'm actually down for it, though.
Yeah.
I can see all the cool kids on the club as well
with the
little dubsteppy EDM-y
damn straight
beat there.
All right,
sure.
So they've invented a real life all electric flying car, and it's just taken off. And this has been my dream for the longest time. How many times have I spoken about this?
Too many to remember, Gareth.
A gazillion. Your flying car might finally be on the way. An all-electric two-seater Lilium jet took its first test flight this week. Lilium Aviation's prototype consumes around 90% less energy than drone-style aircraft and could be the transportation mode of the future. How awesome is that?
Hmm.
Huh? Vertical takeoff and lift, which means like a helicopter, it can go straight up and straight forward.
Well, that's the whole thing with these flying cars, is that they can't have a runway because it just defeats the object. You need Correct. To go literally straight up.
I mean, when you're sitting in peak hour traffic down on the N1 into Joburg in the morning, you don't have space to take off. You got to press that button, start your engines, press another button, start taking off upward, say goodbye to all the peasants below you, and zoom, fly to where you need to be. And you get there quicker than everybody else.
Now,
that makes me happy.
How high up in the sky would you fly? I mean, I can already hear the aviation people saying, no, we can't have them in our... You know what I'm saying? Like, you wouldn't be able to fly that high.
See, the thing is, like, there's going to be, in future, three levels to all this, right?
Okay.
The first level will be your basic drones. They're going to transport goods, recreational flight, that kind of stuff. Your second level is going to be your passenger flying cars like this.
Mm-hmm.
This is the level above that that'll get you from A to B commute-wise. Then the third level will be your commercial planes.
Yeah.
Your actual big aviation level.
Well,
your mass transportation.
And that's what our skies will look like in future.
And they'll just divide it up because you see you've got extra space in the sky. You don't just have the two dimensions of ground transportation, which is forward, backward, left, and right. You also have forward, backward, left, and right, up and down.
Up and down.
Will there be
so
need
you for- imagine you have at a band of, let's say, 500 to 700 meters up in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
You have a certain lane for drones. Then let's say over 1,000 meters to 1,500 meters, you have passenger drones. And again, you can segment that. So the different companies each get 100 meters. It's a lot of space. It's an athletics track. It's what Usain Bolt runs. 100 meters up and down to fly in. Imagine. So they only, from an air traffic control point of view, have to look at that 100 meters. And obviously around airports and things like that, it has to be a lot more complicated, and you need people who can figure in all the different lanes of traffic that are coming in or out. But wouldn't that be cool?
But of course, these things will be autonomous, so it's not like you can go, do I turn left here? Where's the other drone going? They'll all be programmed. So in theory, before someone obviously hacks this all for disaster, they should be able to know exactly where they are, and you get obstacle avoidance, that kind of stuff.
So, well, what are you doing in the car? Are you literally just sitting, doing nothing?
Watching porn.
Okay.
Doing your nails.
Because we're not going to introduce a new set of, like, a new license that you have to now acquire.
Oh, I don't want that responsibility.
To fly your vehicle, your passenger vehicle.
Apparently, Uber are working on their own flying model. And the calculation and design for the Lilium jet. The company's ultimate goal is to make the technology accessible for everyone, replacing expensive ground taxi trips in urban areas with flights at a fraction of the cost.
So all of the things that we usually complain about, you know, flying and dealing with other passengers, you know, feet, crying babies, that's going to be
done when you fly alone. Apparently the distance these can cover with a 1,000-pound battery, which is the standard kind that they use in these aircraft, limited to a range of about 482 kilometers.
Okay, wow. So, I mean, you won't be able to fly to Miami in your passenger vehicle. You still need to board the plane.
But you could go to Durban.
Yeah.
I mean, that's cool.
Hmm.
You could definitely use it for carrying yourself around, you know, around town. I think this is awesome.
Where do they test this out? Imagine you're just casually walking, you know, in Santon, and you're now like, hold up, is that a car in the sky?
They would have to test it where there aren't people. So if they don't have, you know, if they have a problem, they can deal with it. They're not going to crash it into a crowd of people if there's a problem. So they're probably using an old Air Force base somewhere that isn't used anymore. Who knows? All right, anything else?
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
We're done.
All right. We are wrapping it up.
That's us. So we've got a replay of an interview that we did a short while ago. Sia, remind us who it was. Mr. Noyo.
Yes. Mr. Ndangwa Noyo, there we go. He's all about dealing with African issues head on. He's passionate about those discussions and debates. He is the author of a book titled The Wrong Things About Africa. Born in Zambia, he's highly educated and self-proclaimed activist. Yep. And so you spoke to him last year, actually, about
He has fascinating correlations that he draws between Africa and Zambia, which, first of all, is very interesting. Second of all, he says these are the things that Africans are not doing right. Wonder why we're lagging behind in so many ways? Well, he'll answer those questions for you. All of that and more on the way.
Wait a second, let me catch my breath.
This is CliffCentral.com.